Hi, this is Kelly Samuel, and we're here on the Bright Eyes and Me podcast. Kelly is a search engine optimization manager and social media digital marketing space type gal, and we'll be talking about that kind of stuff as well as getting into whatever it goes. You guys know how it goes in this podcast. It just kind of gets into all these different topics. So welcome to Kelly Samuel.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Do you want to just tell us a bit about yourself and why you're doing what you're doing, and and we can go from there.
Sure. So I'm the managing director of a digital marketing agency here in Toronto named Good Media. So I started the social division about 2.5 years ago. Since that kind of culminative moment, I've met a lot of people in Toronto, and I've worked with a lot of people in Toronto through this agency, whether it be content creators or, you know, I've hired a few social managers, a lot of video production. We've done just a lot of creative industries. And then the SEO portion, kind of not extremely lucrative in terms of business, but it's so necessary. So that's still like a staple of our business.
Okay.
So to explain, we're primarily a social media business, but all of our leads come through SEO. So then when people come to us and they ask for social media services, half the time we're explaining that that's not actually what it is, like you actually want SEO.
Okay.
And we do web design and app design and...
First, maybe take like 10 seconds and say, what is search and optimization going forward for the average business man or lady who's listening to this?
Sure.
Why do they want to know about that kind of stuff?
Sure.
And why are you in that, like, in terms of bigger picture?
Okay.
Makes sense.
So bigger picture, I'll start with that, actually.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. So I took media information and technology at Western. One of the very interesting questions that were posed to us as students was this challenge of the internet and the mass of information that has kind of come out of its existence, because we are all content creators. Every single thing that we do is a type of content creation. It leaves a digital footprint that is not erased unless we're intentionally doing so, with the exception of a few platforms like Snapchat or Stories, for example. So SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization, which essentially categorizes the internet. There are very few methods that we have for doing that. So some ways that you can find something, you can type into Google, you can type it into Bing. I don't really know anyone that uses Bing. I think Ask Jeeves is dead.
What? Ask Jeeves?
I think it's dead. I haven't...
Did you say Ask Jeeves?
No. Ask Jeeves.
Like, that is not dead.
Jesus is dead.
No, he's not dead. For all the Christian brothers and sisters out there, he's not dead.
Well, I thought that he...
Okay, Ask Jeeves. Ask Jeeves.
Yeah, so...
Although DuckDuckGo is a thing, right?
Yeah, there's Ecosia, which is an interesting one. But anyway, these search engines are essentially kind of like libraries. They categorize the way that we find information. And then the other ways that we can do that are from referral, if you talk to somebody about something you found on the internet, or strange websites like StumbleUpon, things that like are created to generate random content for you.
Okay, so people go on StumbleUpon, they go on these websites, and that leaves a footprint that then you can come in as a third party and kind of like track where they're going, and then...
Not necessarily.
No? Okay, I'm wrong.
Not necessarily, but you're on the right track. So SEO is the process of optimizing particular websites so that when someone types in a particular phrase, you come up. So, for example, if they type in Bright Eyes Miguel, there are certain methods that you can take to make sure that your name and your website comes up at the top when you search it.
Okay.
So it's a extremely covert way of appearing to be objective when it's actually extremely subjective.
Like you're talking about a Google search?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because people trust what they see at the top of Google search results.
So that's very easy to manipulate on a mass scale.
Yes.
Like from higher powers that be, if they want to.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to get too much into the days. I mean,
but like, if, when?
When, yeah, it obviously happens with, yeah, it's a good point. Like, I think it's important to realize that in all things in life, people have their own biases and perspectives and intentions and goals in their lives and in their realities that goes onto the internet too. Like, it's not different. It's not like some new world that's subjective and this new world that's like a computer runs it. Like, the internet's run by humans, right?
Yeah. And the interesting part is that we are aware that SEO is a thing, and we're aware that those search results come from a location, yet we still have this inherent trust of things that are categorized that aren't openly labeled as ads.
Okay.
But it truly is a business, right? Like, that's what our agency is built upon. That's what a lot of different digital agencies are built upon. Manufacturing that trust and sorting things so that people can find the right information when you're looking for specific things. So if you're searching for an Apple farm, but instead you get Apple computers.
Okay.
That would be an example of a situation where you should probably do SEO, or those results need to be changed in a way because it's not relevant enough to you.
Okay. So the big boys, like, let's say Google, like, is a lot of their job managing different big companies and their expectations in terms of SEO? Like, does it get down to that nitty-gritty level?
No, not at all.
Google's... Like, Coca-Cola wouldn't be like, all right, Google, give me some love.
Not at all.
No?
Google, well, because they have their own method of obtaining profit from their search engine, which isn't organic, it's the paid version.
Okay.
So Google AdWords, companies can pay a certain amount of money for a certain cost per click for particular keywords, and they show up at the top, and you see that little green box that says ad.
Okay.
So that's how Google monetizes the search engine. The organic is up to smaller businesses and agencies and companies that understand how the algorithm works and what Google looks for when they're categorizing things.
Okay.
So Google has very little to do with that. They actually more act as the gatekeepers, and they make sure that, like, companies that are being unethical or using black methods to manipulate search results aren't being seen.
Okay. So,
yeah, they work as a referee.
Hmm. Okay, so where do you see the internet in general going? Like, let's get, like, even bigger picture. Like, what's the end goal of constant improvement in technology and growth? Like, where are we going to go as a species?
I think it depends on who you're asking.
I'm asking you.
Okay.
You are...
Well, it's a very loaded question. I'll say that, because... at a certain point, you hit saturation. So actually, this is a good analogy because we were just talking about AdWords. So when Google AdWords launched, depending on the industry you were in, it was affordable for you to pay for higher competitive keywords. So like maybe you were like a divorce lawyer. Divorce lawyers are like very competitive in AdWords.
Okay.
Divorce lawyer Toronto, that would be the keyword you type in. You would be able to actually afford to pay that cost per click, and then you would get business from it, and it would be affordable, and that worked for you.
Okay. Sorry, just to interrupt, like, you're paying so that, like, let's say you pay $500 or $1,000 so that you're number 7 on the list of Google searches instead of number 10.
Slightly different. So the organic stuff shows up below the AdWords. So whenever you type something, and this isn't for every keyword, but the first 2 searches have a little green box around it that say ad. That's the AdWords.
Oh.
Everything else is organic.
AdWords specifically. Okay.
Yeah.
But the rest is still SEO.
Yeah, the rest is SEO, but the AdWords isn't SEO.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. So, so back to this analogy. So this was working for companies for a long time. And at a certain point, the market became saturated. There were too many people that caught on that this was a good thing. It became so expensive to actually use it that it stopped being an option for a lot of businesses.
Right, because like divorce lawyer, there'd be probably 10,000 of them that are using this now.
Yeah.
But there's only one Google, for example.
And what's the point if it's not actually bringing the same or more income than you're putting into it?
Right.
So a lot of companies stopped using it. So when we talk about the internet on the whole, search engines will not be the only way that we can cut it in terms of organizing the internet. We need to find better ways to categorize the information that we currently have, to separate it from the stuff that's relevant or interesting or funny, and the stuff that is incorrect, filler, or otherwise not relevant.
Fake, uh-oh. Yeah. Did I bring that into there? My mom loves saying that expression now.
It's fake.
Fake news!
Oh, no!
Like, not even politically. She'll just be like, is that lemon?
Oh,
no?
So cute.
You're telling me it's a lime? Fake news! She'll, like, be so amused at herself. So, like, I guess just away from, like, the SEO stuff, on technology in general, like, how do you view the impact of it versus living, I don't know, 100 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what ways are we better that, like, we wouldn't expect that we're better in, and what ways are we worse?
I wasn't alive 100 years ago, but you and I are actually in a really interesting place because we're both millennials, but we also straddle the space where digital natives live. So anywhere, anyone that was born after 1997 or so.
Yeah, they only knew that. They only know that.
Yeah,
right?
And it wasn't that they only knew social media. It was that they grew up in a time where their relatives might have actually created accounts for them. And when, as they came of age, they were uncovering information that was part of their digital footprint they hadn't even put there themselves.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So, and the interesting thing about us, we actually knew a time before social media was pervasive. And there are not going to be very many generations like us, because not only do we completely understand the, I don't want to say, it's not that it's primal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not archaic. There's a word that I'm looking for that's a lovely word. Analog.
Regal?
No.
Like a king.
Is very regal, the analog word. Kind of the opposite. It's kind of like rough and tumble, and it was a lot more hands-on and a lot more authentic. And
well, I view living like a king sometimes, like the best way of living, as being disconnected.
Fair.
So in that twisted way.
Okay. Okay. I see the connection. Yeah, yeah. I see it. In the connotation of the word.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So we're very fortunate because we can understand that analog world while still being completely a part of this digital sphere. So I don't even remember what the question was, but I got on a tangent
like,
there.
What is the pros and cons that maybe somebody wouldn't typically think of the way we're living with so much technology versus a different time, like the time mm-hmm. that we were kids and before?
Sure. So something interesting, this is an argument that comes up a lot, and you're probably quite familiar with the idea of being immersed in your phones in public spaces.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I'm a people watcher. I take public transit twice a day, every day, more times actually, usually, because I'll like stop and get ice cream and then like hop back on the subway and then keep going.
Okay.
But it's interesting because people are completely, completely engrossed in their phones. But before phones were a thing, like, it was newspapers.
Okay.
Before newspapers were a thing, it likely was more of a social convention to not look people in the eyeballs. It's a...
Okay.
You know...
So there's always been this, like, kind of fear of talking to a stranger?
I think that is more what I'm getting at. It's either a fear or a distraction, because it's so much more comfortable to exist in your own head, to have your own personal space without feeling like you need to kind of step out of your comfort bubble and actually start a conversation with somebody. You know, there are a lot of people that say technology is to blame. I think it's more of a cultural issue.
Really?
And I think that technology plays a minor role in that.
Okay.
I think that
it's like an enabler instead of like a source.
It exaggerates things that perhaps were already there.
Okay.
Because if you're already looking for ways to ignore everybody, chances are that if you don't have your phone on you that day, you're going to bring a book, you're going to put your headphones in, pretend that you actually have music playing. Mm-hmm.
But is that caused by getting used to the fact that you need that dopamine rush? Because I'm a big believer that whatever you've experienced, especially recently in your life, mm-hmm. your habits become a part of who you are. So mm-hmm. if you always have your phone on you, mm-hmm. you need that dopamine rush of that external
stimulation,
right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so then you pull out a book. But if you didn't have the technology, I've never really thought about what you just said, mm-hmm. but it makes sense. I guess it has to do with being comfortable with being open with somebody that you don't know, which is kind of the entire point of my other videos and things mm-hmm. that I want to be doing and what I want to improve in the world is having people mm-hmm. be more comfortable and open with talking with somebody, because in my life I've experienced so many times that I've reached out to somebody that I didn't know in one situation or another, and I've either got really good advice, mm-hmm. I've given them a piece of music or a book or something that they were like, oh my gosh, like that's, I feel like that would really help my life right now.
Oh, cool.
Or like even like really difficult times in my life where I've had to make a really big decision. Sometimes you need that outside perspective, and your family is so used to being the ones, your family and friends, they know you and they know your tendencies. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, yeah, the most honest advice you can get is purely from somebody that you didn't know before. And even just on a micro scale, like not even needing to have a huge goal that you're accomplishing or that it brings you forward in some sort of level of growth. Like mm-hmm. on a micro scale, people are the things that make us joyful and connected and mm-hmm. more aware of the truth of things. So I feel like my goal with this mini movement that is in my own little world is to have people realize the importance of these little interactions with people and to cut those dopamine rushes and cut those habits of not talking to people. And so mm-hmm. I think technology is a big part of that, mm-hmm. but I'm glad that you kind of said that little jolt of like, it's definitely like deeper than that, because it's very true.
It's easy to blame it on the most common denominator. Mm-hmm. When in most situations, any type of reaction, any sort of event, is typically the result of several different variables, you know? And we know that as human beings, we know that every action that we take it's never unilateral, but it's so much easier to kind of pin it on technology because it seems like it's the most obvious thing out mm-hmm. there. But I think there's a larger issue at hand that kind of goes much farther than technology. That's this, I don't want to say pervasive loneliness, mm-hmm. but it's this concept that people are afraid to kind of put themselves out there. And like not just personality wise, like, you know, from children we're taught not to speak to strangers. And I think that is something that cross-generationally has been a common theme. Like, you know, you go to the corner store and back, don't speak to anybody. If anyone says or offers you anything, run in the opposite direction, come find me.
I don't think it's necessarily been unjustified, because mm-hmm. in history, things were a lot more dangerous
yeah.
than they were now.
Oh, and yeah.
A lot of people tell me and say, okay, things are actually quite dangerous out there. Stuff might happen, all this stuff. And just statistic-wise, as we know, like things are the most safe that they've been.
Yeah.
But I think, and even stuff like human beings are inherently selfish or something like that. Like, mm-hmm. and they list all the evidence of all of history, or they're inherently violent because of all the evidence of all the history of war. They don't understand that we as a species are on an evolution that, and it's not even like, you know, like John Lennon, Imagine, whatever. It's not, you don't even need to be that kind of person to recognize that we have the capacity to be different humans than we've ever been. And we are doing that. Mm-hmm. And it starts from our own individual actions. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about?
I don't know, I got really wrapped up in my drawing.
So we're drawing little pictures of something that makes us happy.
It's really light.
Yeah.
I'll go over it.
At the end. Yeah. But I'm a huge believer, too, that when you're talking to somebody or doing something, your base level of thoughts, so kind of like what your subconscious is doing, is a huge harbinger of what your outside is doing. So when I go and talk to somebody, I will say to myself, okay, I'm going to be bubbly and noble and connected with them. And like, I have that thought as my base thought. I repeat it in my head like 5 times and then I talk to them. Versus when I don't do that, I find a huge, huge difference. And I think that a lot of people who are successful in life, whether consciously or unconsciously, have a varying degrees of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that relates to what we're doing, because as we're talking, we're drawing something that's making us happy. So I'm drawing, I didn't know this made me happy, but it does, I guess. It's kind of like a pumpkin man who's kind of has octopus legs and he's looking for a flag or something. But it's like, it's bringing out this dream fantasy of mine of happiness while I'm talking about something completely unrelated. But that base subconscious kind of like minor dopamine rush is something that's like happy. So the other stuff that comes out is more happy. It's very psychological too.
You said something really important there. About when you're consciously thinking about the fact that you're going to be bubbly, you're going to be courageous, you're going to be noble. I think that, you know, we had a conversation that was off camera. Maybe it was something that was important to this conversation about purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the purpose is the part that's really missing culturally. The fact that you actually go out there and you think, okay, I'm actually going to be kind to somebody today. I'm going to put my best self forward. I'm going to try and actually have a conversation with somebody I normally wouldn't speak to. I'm going to move outside my comfort zone. You know, instead of trying to figure out the pieces that are lacking or the pieces that maybe are hindering us, I would love to more think about how we can start building those pieces into the regular thoughts of our youth.
Right.
How do we start forming these thoughts at a very young age that, like, yes, it is actually okay to speak to strangers in the right context. Obviously, it's a different world than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And this obviously has to be situational and as well. I don't want anyone running off and coming back and telling me, like, hey, like, that's bad advice. But changing our attitude about how we present ourselves to the world and being purposeful about the way we speak to others and interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am. There's a lot of homeless people in Toronto. Obviously, this is not new information. But as a woman who's got a fairly weak constitution and, like, extremely noodly arms, I am not really, like, the best candidate to get myself into trouble. But I still try and go out on a limb whenever I feel comfortable to speak to those that are in the subway or they're panhandling or they're asking for something, because obviously there's a lack there. They need something.
Mm.
There's, if you can't give, you could at least have a conversation. And some days I work myself up and I can be purposeful in my interaction. I can go say hi. I can ask them how they're doing. What's their day like? What did they eat today? Do they want some pizza? Do you want to come grab a coffee with me? Whatever. But some days I can't. Some days I clam up. I think about myself too much. I get worried. My anxiety takes over. And then I put my blinders on and
yeah.
I pretend that I don't have purpose. I shut it out.
And I think it's important that word purpose is so important to me, because so many people view purpose as some grand thing you need to do, and
mm-hmm.
there really is no, like, you look at all the celebrities, I don't know, Will Smith and Jim Carrey and all these guys
mm-hmm.
that try to tell you, I wish that you all got your goals and dreams in this world, in this physical world,
mm-hmm.
to realize that it won't make you happy, right? Like,
yeah.
The things that make you happy is the micro purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're saying about purpose is really important as a society. Where are we going, right? Like, with, I guess we can get into technology again. It's like with this unending growth of AI and technology that's making our lives easier.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, oh my gosh, I work for this company that makes, what do you call the thing that cleans things? I don't do it very often.
Vacuum.
A vacuum. I work for a vacuum cleaner company that makes things way more efficient, and I don't even have to do it myself now. Like, it does it on its own. So it's like, yes, like, you get this little purpose that you're making the world a better place in terms of making things easier. But where's the grander purpose? And I'm not diminishing what people do, that everyone that works jobs that have some purpose in making things easier for people, that's like a huge purpose in itself. But on a more macro scale, where is society going by making everything easier? Like, why is the goal to make everything easier for our lives when living is cooking, living is cleaning, living is doing those little things that take you away from other troubles of life? And it's just part of life. It's a huge aspect of being human, is to take care of yourself in some way, to take care of those you love. And our purpose as a society seems to be to make things ever easier for each other. But we forget that we're making things that are just human things going to be non-existent. And then where are we going to get our purpose from? Like, once you have a robot that can do everything around in the house, why is that the end goal of our society? So I think that we need to start thinking a lot more about that and shifting our mindset into the purpose of my life is to express myself and like connect with people around me in order to get to accomplish my goals and feel that loving feeling, feel that connection. And that's it. Like, just for the purpose of it, that's it. You don't need to have a grander purpose of making your life easier. And I think it's an amazing thing to do as a job, as a profession, but we have to remember that the grander purpose should be in that moment of these small connections.
You know, that's an interesting question you posed. And, you know, I have to admit, when it comes to automating these things that take time that used to be integral to the human existence, so cooking is a big one. Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly agree. Our entire existence used to surround cooking. There's an excellent documentary on Netflix right now. You should watch it. I think it's literally called Cooked. They've got 4 episodes, and they talk about the 4 elements and how humans have cultivated food through those 4 elements in the past. And it talks about how our evolution is shaped by that. Okay. But when we talk about the creation of cooking, of actually, not only do we have livestock, we've settled, we actually have, we have methods of preparing and storing food in the long term, and we're not hunter-gatherers anymore, we've now opened up our possibilities to so much more. That was really what set us off in terms of our entire existence. So the counter argument to
what I'm saying,
hate to say it, but the counter argument is, if Alexander Graham Bell, if his work, if he was able to continue where he left off, because the first 30 years of his life, that was shrunken down into a single year, if he was spending time on less menial tasks and had additional capacity to then work on larger projects, doesn't that have merit? I don't know. I think that there's a fine line between automation being a bad thing and being a good thing.
Okay. No, that's totally fair. I think that what you're saying is totally right. Mm-hmm. But that this isn't just about cooking. Like, it's kind of like a prevailing mindset in everything, that there needs to be this like growth of betterness, almost. Right? So like, yes, it's amazing that Alexander Graham Bell didn't have to cook for 3 hours a day so that he could spend it building the telephone. But on a kind of scale of where we are now in society, yes, it'll be so cool to have virtual reality. Yes, it'll be so cool when all these things will be able to clean for you. Or yes, it's cool that Uber Eats will be able to deliver something to your door, like, in a second. Like, these things are really good for humanity. But we have to remember that living without these things is good too, and that and that getting into these complete virtual worlds, like, it'll never end, but that in that moment of, like, what am I saying, like, getting from making the pizza yourself or something,
there's still merit, because those things make us human, right?
Yeah, there's merit in the lesser technological things.
Yeah,
because they make us human.
And
but the technological stuff makes us human too, of course. Like, even like a virtual world, like that's our own minds going into a different place and being imaginative. And and I also am of the belief that we have the potential as a species to kind of rid ourselves of almost all menial stuff, right? Which could be an amazing thing, because then it frees, like you said, it frees ourselves, all of us, to do creative things that we want to do without having to worry about anything menial. So when I said that unending technological growth is a bad thing, I don't know if I even said that, but I was kind of inferring that. I didn't really mean that. I meant like the mindset of always needing to have to grow and make something better is maybe where we have to look at things and appreciate that, like, it doesn't need to be better to have a better life. It's just like a different life, and it's continuing to be human in a different way. But like, we're already at a point where we're so comfortable. We're already at a point where in the West, we have pretty much everything for us. Even if you're at the bottom of society, you're okay. Like, there's homeless people, and we have a lot of struggles and a lot of issues with the poor and even middle class or rich people. Of course, everyone has so many issues, but not a lot of people are dying and not able to at least have access to shelter. All these things, like, but
you brought up your point where we really do have it quite figured out for 70% of us, which is a problem. You know, instead of continuing to move outwards, shouldn't we stop and kind of reassess how we're using that information and that technology and that growth and that knowledge?
Exactly.
And why there is still a extremely pervasive issue with homeless people in Toronto not getting the resources they need, not opening sufficient shelters the coldest days of the year, you know, women and children being the primary recipients of that sort of care who are being severely neglected. Like, you know, why are these still issues that we're having when we've come so far technologically? You know, where is the humane part of that that says, okay, hold on, we need to redistribute our resources, we need to actually create some kind of plan that works, because, you know, there's a large portion of our society that's slipping through the cracks. And there are lovely people like you that are working on the ground level. We need legislation too. We need a plan.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm kind of like getting into the whole political part of this, is what I was kind of originally thinking of. Like, I see these facts and figures of, like, I was in finance previously, so I have some degree of understanding of that kind of world, and everything is always judged by how much growth there is what I was kind of saying. I mean, there's so many people doing good work in you know, B Corp.
Yeah, that's it.
So I'm in this social media world now. I was telling you before, as we were introducing ourselves, that I went traveling for a while and I didn't even post at all to Instagram. I didn't use social media at all. But now I've kind of realized that it's quite a necessity type thing in today's world. In a lot of ways, we're living in an attention economy, and more things will be about attention. And I mean, it's not necessarily a negative connotation. A lot of people are using that as in very selfish ways and kind of like get caught up in all that kind of stuff. But it's true. It's here. It's necessary for success, whether you're very genuine and loving about it or not. So I wanted to ask you about, where do you see the value coming in in-person friendships, and how can we, because a lot of people feel disconnected, and I think there was a stat that said in America, like, people say they only have one real friend or something on average, like that. Yeah, so, but they have like 500 friends on Instagram and whatever it is. So where's that going, and how can we get people to have more real friends than one?
Yeah. You know, just admitting that they're different relationships is so important, because when you follow somebody on Instagram, or when you're friends with somebody on Facebook, you more than often are having a parasocial relationship with them instead of an actual relationship with them. So that term defines a relationship where it's one-sided, where there's one person that's, you know, putting out content in a way that's engaging, and the other person is passively absorbing it. Sometimes they engage back, but it's not a dialogue, right? Like, it's interesting, because as 20-somethings, we know how much context or how much additional information can be said through punctuation or through emojis or through liking something. You know, like, there are a lot of people out there that have probably gotten in trouble for liking an image that they shouldn't have. When we break that down on, like, a very, like, primal level, like, that's not a big deal, but it's, there's so much more communication that goes into it. But that's not a dialogue, right? We have to be really aware of what that relationship is, that's a consuming habit of social media that's not actually a back and forth. Okay. So when you have relationships with people in social media, it's not likely that it's an equal back and forth. And this is coming from somebody that social media is extremely important to me. I'm very active on a lot of different channels. Instagram is my big one. But these parasocial relationships I have with people are completely different than my tangible relationships that I have in real life. And I think it's extremely important. And it's not that, you know, the relationships you have with people on social media are a bad thing. And that's not it at all. But unaccompanied by actual relationships with people is a bad thing. Because I think that one cannot exist without the other. You do need to actually have a space for back and forth. It's not that you need a space for intimate moments, because you can share intimate stories or intimate moments through social media, and there can be a level of personal space. You know, we see that a lot with Belle Let's Talk. We see that a lot with people who are sharing their stories about suicide or mourning or loss or grief. But it's not the same as having a conversation with somebody in the room where you can read their social cues, where you can see that, you know, someone's slouched, they haven't slept in a few days, they're... I wasn't talking about you. You're not, like, slouching or anything. Okay. I'm over here like this.
Well, I think, like, yeah, just that... To bring the word, like, energy of it, but it just... Mm-hmm. I think physical touch is so, so important. And people like, think that they are interacting with people, and so they're, like, being healthy and social, but they'll feel lonely after a while, and the only solution is to get out there and try and do your best to talk to people.
Yeah, and it's important. Like, it's, again, it's not a bad thing to have, you know, strong relationships with people on Facebook or Instagram, but it is a different type of interaction, and you will start to feel lonely. Right? Yeah. Like, there's a space 100%. for every type of persona in your life, you know, whether that's your fun persona, you know, if you want to think about this in terms of people, there are the people that you like to party with, and sometimes these overlap, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. There are the people you like to party with, there are the people that you like to talk ideas with, there are the people that you like to talk on podcasts with about the world and humanity. There are people that challenge you, that you constantly argue with, and it changes the way that you perceive the world. And there are people that you don't talk about anything intimate with because you have fun with those people. And those people still serve an important part in your life, but you still have to come back to the most important persona, which is your intimate persona, the one that you share your fears with, your goals with, you can talk about loss and mourning with. Those are important things that you need dialogue for, because if you don't have dialogue about those things, you don't grow.
And I think it's very important now to interject that this is a good spot to talk to a stranger about, which you think would maybe be the worst thing to do, or you're the most scared to do, but you'd be so surprised and shocked by some of the things that can happen to you if you reach out to somebody in a moment of weakness. And my whole, like, one of the main goals of why I'm doing this is because I want to inspire people to reach out to people when they're having moments of pain, moments of weakness, and they feel like a lack of connection, and they wish they had that friend that you could talk to about not just the serious stuff, but that funny friend, and that goofy friend, and that sporty friend, and that party friend. Like, that you might not have that designated friend, and you're like, shoot, I wish I had that friend. But a stranger can really surprise you and turn into that friend, even if it's for a day. And there's also something that you said about the relationship you have between of output versus input, like mm-hmm. output of a content creator or whatever versus someone who's like a follower, let's say. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to note that everything you do in the world is either outputting your existence, your-ness to the world, or mm-hmm. intaking. And that's not just intaking somebody on your Instagram feed. Mm-hmm. That's intaking the TV. That's intaking a book. That's intaking someone else's ideas. That's intaking a recipe that somebody else made. That's intaking a movie. That's intaking watching a YouTube video or a podcast or something. Like, you're intaking information. You're intaking somebody else's existence and interpretation of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to recognize that we all have these moments all the time, and most people intake way, 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 way more than they output. And you don't have to be a content creator on Instagram or something like that to outtake things. But I think another key to life and a key to like happiness or existence or whatever is to do your best to outtake a little bit more than you do now. So whether that's singing a little bit in the shower or drawing or like doing a somersault in your room or making your bed or like random tasks that aren't even with people, or whether that's calling somebody and telling them something good about them or gosh, writing something, writing a journal or something. Like, these small acts are all acts of output and like output in the world, and it's you expressing something because it comes from something that you've learned. Like, it comes from all your intakes, all the added intakes you ever had in your life create your outtakes. But if you're not doing outtakes, it's not a healthy flow. Like, it's not like you're only doing intakes, and eventually you'll just be sad and depressed and overwhelmed, even if it's like good advice that you're getting, good things or all these things. It's like you need to have that natural flow of the external world flowing with the internal world, if that makes any sense.
Push and pull.
Yeah.
There always has to be momentum. And, you know, kind of looping back to the very beginning of this podcast when we were talking about saturation, you can be saturated from intaking too much content.
Yeah, too much good stuff.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Too much of anything is a bad thing. And if you're not having an exchange, if mm-hmm. there's not movement between those two processes, there's no growth. And when there's no growth, what's the point?
Yeah, cool. Well, you know what? This has been really good.
Thanks.
I think we've had a couple of insights for the audience, and I hope you guys liked it, and we'll tune in next week or in 2 weeks or whatever the next one is. But thank you so much for being on here, Kelly.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for thinking of me.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to today's podcast with Kelly Samuel. Today, as in every day, we hope you be bright eyes. Good night.